Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Hack the Entrepreneur is supported by CityCards with Android Pay. Listening on your phone? Now you can pay while you listen using the same device. Just tap and go. Download the Android Pay app on Google Play or visit city.com/AndroidPay to get started. Android Pay is available for eligible Citi consumer credit and debit cards.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a speaker, guerrilla marketer, and an entrepreneur. He founded PlanetIV.com and ScreenRobot. These two sites combined have received nearly 20 million page views without any paid marketing. He is currently the founder of Magnific, a company that helps grow early stage companies through a combination of rapid social media growth, guerrilla community management tactics, and growth hacks. As a company, they also beat out over 1,500 other startups to be accepted into the prestigious accelerator Techstars London. Now, let's hack Vincent Dignan. Before we get rolling here, I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Braintree. I know you remember the first dollar you made in business. It's a hard thing to forget. It's one of the greatest parts of being an entrepreneur. And now you want to grow until your business makes your millionth or billionth dollar. But have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit braintreepayments.com/hack. That's braintreepayments.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest all the way from London, England. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's lovely to digitally be here.
Thanks, man. I think it's going to be fun. What do you say we jump into it?
Aye, I'm ready.
All right. Vincent, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Great question. I could give so many practical examples, but I really just have to say it's having my ass in the chair. Like, it really is. You just want it more and you just outwork the other guy. So look, I can tell you about some breakthroughs. You can go on Audience, AudienceE.com, and scrape all of Twitter for all of your customers so you can reach out to people. You know, that was major for me. So you could do that literally right now and get lots of people. You could go on Charlie app, type in anyone's email address, find all the public information about them on the internet. So then when you go and talk to them, you know what they're into. You go on Email Hunter, you could type in any web address, find all the email address people who work at that company, and then reach out to them via Discoverly, which shows you all the people you have in common with people you're trying to meet so that you can get warm intros. And this is like three examples out of a million I could give. And it's, oh, wow, they're good examples. Sure. But hundreds and hundreds, thousands of websites I had to go through to get those three good things. You know, when I give talks, I have all of these little silver bullets lined up. But yeah, at a base level, you really have to spend a lot of time in the chair to get to that stage. So I'm a big fan of opting out of as much as possible. Don't follow news and politics. Don't worry, you cannot escape them. You'll still stay in the loop because people will constantly come at you with it. Where possible, don't drink alcohol, don't see friends, don't see family. Just focus on what needs to be done. Over time, you can add things back in, but a controversial journalist once wrote an article about startups in London, and it was Easter weekend, and he overheard one founder say to the other, "All right, then, I'll see you on Tuesday." And he was thinking, Tuesday, you don't get 4 days off. If you're running a startup, that doesn't happen. So I really think that's got to be the big difference. And I rarely meet people with that work ethic. And it's really obvious when you do. They're optimizing everything, their diet, the things they think about, the people they spend time with. They're optimizing everything towards success. And then I feel like on a base level, people will say, does that make you a boring person? And what they overlook is when you have 95% of your time on it, your 5% is ridiculous. You know, I've done 2 American tours this year, you know, partying in Vegas, you know, like having the best experiences, partying, warehouse parties in New York, warehouse parties in Skid Row in Los Angeles. Like I've been all over the States as, you know, a kid from London, you know, that's amazing. And you can party so well because you've earned it through doing this stuff. And as an aside, on the last trip, other than celebrating my Kickstarter launch, which was really successful in Austin, I didn't drink for the entire thing. So in New York, I was out like networking and meeting people till 4 a.m. every night. And then I get up at noon and work all day. Like, not drinking alcohol is a damn superpower.
Wow. That's what it is right there.
Yeah.
We got to it. So, it's not like being in New York. It's not being in Austin. It's not being in LA, you don't think? It's not being on stage. It's not writing that book that's now a hit.
No.
Like through crowd.
No.
It's literally the ass in the chair doing the work.
Yeah. You know, Skype was from Estonia. You know, there's black swans everywhere. You know, Richard Branson, you wouldn't have invested him if he came along at 20. You'd say, oh, you know, you never finished college. You never done anything. Like every success story is a black swan. And everyone, Elon Musk, Zuckerberg, everyone, they put in crazy hours. And for me, that's the same whether you want to do a consultancy or a startup. Because the more hours you put in, the more leverage. The more risks you take, the less hours you have to put in. But that's something that's really, really hard to do for anyone to come up with. But yeah, everything else is excuses. Some of the best companies in the world, like Apple and Microsoft, I think, were funded during recessions. So all external circumstances don't matter. And as an aside, by the way, even when the things don't succeed, they lead into other things. Like, you know, I raised a little under $500,000 to get Planet Ivy and Screen Robot going. It didn't end up in me selling the company, but it then segued into me launching a successful agency, revenue generating from day one. And then that led on to other things. Like, I think people definitely want to speak in definite terms. I don't know what people think when a startup fails. Do you go and sit in the garden shed for 2 years? No, I mean, when you learn a lot from your startup, you then have shitloads of knowledge that you can go on for consulting or starting another company. And then you have a heap of secret sauce that you've learned. So I think these very definite terms of success and failure really miss the point. Plus, any large company is super impressed if you have started your own company. If you do want to just go back to working for someone, it's like the best thing you can have on your CV and you'll learn the most. So yeah, it really all comes down to you. Everything else is excuses. The market, the customers, bad co-founders, you're completely responsible for every choice you make. And even if you're not, even if it genuinely is one of those things, blame yourself anyway. You'll learn a lot more.
What about being born or being from the UK? Like, do you feel that that's like held you back in ways that you weren't born in San Francisco or raised in New York City?
Yeah, it's something I think about a lot. I mean, here's the thing, you know, when 8 months ago, when I realized the power of public speaking, I just hopped on a plane. I just hustled and booked 8 talks in America, hopped on a plane and talked. I'm English. I spoke in English. I came back with thousands and thousands of dollars in orders. So I really can't say it's a disadvantage being that I speak English and then I go to somewhere else that speaks English. And also, when people ask me what I feel about Britain, I say Britain is great. It's I would say it's the most equal place in the world, like minimal levels of sexism, racism, homophobia. It seemed to have spiked a little bit around Brexit, but in terms of, for instance, the laws we have in place to protect the vulnerable and our welfare system, like it's amazing for that. the only drawback, in my opinion, is when you want to go to the upper levels. It's like you can be big in London and then, the example I always give is rap music. If you're big, if you're a big rapper in South Florida, you could easily be a millionaire. But if you're big in South London, you can't make any money. And like London is, you know, one of the epicenters of the world. It's just about this whole glass ceiling thing. Like London, you'll hit the limit pretty soon. And there are exceptions. Industries like fashion and fintech are really big right now. And London has those big financial and fashion centers. But generally speaking, yeah, if you're ambitious, you should be at the very least be considering America. And I find it surprising how few British people are doing that. So I guess you can never dwell on the things, decisions you made, because they could be good, they could be bad. But again, it comes down to if you want that thing, you know, go over and get it, you know?
Exactly. And full disclosure, I read an article by you, I believe on Huffington Post, back in March, right. I think. And yeah, you were just coming back from, I believe, South by Southwest, and you were kind of blown away by how different...
I think American
entrepreneurs are compared to the UK. So that was all. Yeah. And I think we feel the same thing in Canada. Like none of us are Americans, even though we're like geographically closer, we're still just as far away as you are. Don't worry.
Yeah. Texas GDP is bigger than Canada's. You know that.
I know.
All
right. So ass in the chair and just outworking the other person is your one thing. Now,
yeah.
Every expert, Vincent, talks about the 80-20 rule in business. Do 20%, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at, delegate the rest. Vincent, can you please tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
So it's a really good question. I think innovation and looking forward, I could be a lot better at. Here's something, it's very true. It's really hard to say no to money. I think anyone who runs an agency or a business would love to have what I have. 7 days a week, 365, people will offer me money. They find my talks on YouTube. They've seen my talk and they want to hire me. I constantly get asked for money. And thus, I run an agency. And my team actually does 80% of the work now. I very recently got better at it. But when you have money coming in, it's really hard to think about the future. You know, I really would like to put time into creating a YouTube channel, creating a Snapchat channel, writing more to get more new work and thinking of new innovations around traffic generation and so on. But it's hard when you have that money coming in. So I really think spending 20% time on innovation, and I think having a really good model for that, like at the moment is in a bit of my downtime period before I go back out on tour in America. It's just quite hard to figure out what exactly to do, you know, to put it in a framework to be thinking about new ideas. Like a friend of mine, it just comes up with new ideas all the time. He doesn't necessarily execute on them, but his ideas are very, very good because he spends a lot of time thinking them up. So finding that balance, because eventually it will ruin you if you're not thinking ahead. There's a kind of latency that sets in. And in a way, you kind of become like a big company in that you have something that works and then you do more of it because it makes money and you have a system and you do more of it and that makes more money. And on top of that, what I do is fun. Fun is like one of the things that drives me. So it's really hard to think of the moonshots. But I was on American TV for the first time. I was talking and he was like, the presenter liked me and he was like, what one thing could I do for you if I could do anything in the world? And I said, well, get my full-time American work visa. And he said, oh, well, that's easy. Just put $250,000 in an American bank account. And I nodded along as if, oh yeah, why didn't I think of that? Like, and he said, I wanted a Singapore visa. So I put $10 million in a Singapore bank account because I wanted a visa. And then the government matched it for another $10 million. And I was just thinking, damn, imagine having $10 million to put somewhere on a whim and then to get the bonus of the government covering it. And that's not actually that unusual. If you relocate your company to Ireland, the government will match any seed round up to like €1 million. If you raise €1 million from investors, Ireland government will match it. But I was just thinking, damn, I'm now in America mixing with people who have $10 million to place on something on a whim. And that's when you start to think, I really need to find a good vessel and a good innovation for future, or my increases will only ever be incremental.
So do you like sort of like hanging out in the US now because of that whole like, it's you are who like the five people you surround yourself with. Mm. that big thinking, that big like $10 million, yeah. drop it in a bank account.
Yeah.
Does that push you forward, or does that kind of make you feel like you're even further away from it?
I mean, that's a good point. The best scene of any movie ever is the first scene from Glengarry Glen Ross. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Yeah, so where Alec Baldwin comes in and he chews them out for bad performance. And it's a great Cracked article about it. And it says, look, if someone shouts at you and says you're not doing your job, or, you know, through that same thing when you find someone's doing better than you, there's two ways you can look at it. The first is silently seethe, find a way to out them as a hypocrite, find a way to think of them as less than you in some way. Or secondly, to see it as motivation to go, yeah, I am going to listen and I am going to take it up. And I think that's a really major point, like taking full responsibility for your actions is really the difference between being, you know, a kid and an adult, really. Once you take responsibility, you can do big things. Particularly on the last American trip, in that first 3 weeks, I met three or four people who were better than me. And I know I'm inviting criticism by saying that, and it's a very broad term, but yeah, you meet someone and you're just like, damn, they're better than me. They've done more, they're further along, their mindset seems great. Things like, you know, diet is on point and all of that. And yeah, that's really inspiring for me. To meet people better than me. And yeah, for some reason, I kept coming across a lot of them in America. And yeah, that was really good because I start to grow a lot from that.
That's it. You have the growth mindset. I can't remember her name, that book, but it's not the fixed mindset. Like when you see somebody, quote unquote, better than you, you just want to push forward to be that. You're not just like, oh, I'll never be that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's and you don't want to be that, but you just look at yourself and have a self-awareness. And yeah, so for instance, I met someone in Victoria, Canada, who had this great innovative business, and he'd had multiple successes, and he had his diet on lock, he had his exercise, he had so many things that, you know, when I got back to my apartment, I was just like, you know, I'm not really doing these things. Yeah, they're like basic things that I kind of know I should have been doing, but I haven't. And then I look at the results. And of course, there's plenty of famous people who eat fast food all day and aren't good. But yeah, like I always say, when I start my talks and I tell people about what I do, it's not to impress them. It's to impress on them what can be done, as Tim Ferriss would say. I don't have any special skills. I'm not a coder. I don't think I'm a particularly great marketer, although I do it for a living. But all I have is a work ethic, like a very, very strong work ethic. And I will sacrifice anything to improve on the things that I'm good at.
Yeah, I love it. And so let's move, if we can, to projects. So
yeah.
I know, like you say, your weakness is sort of having that innovation, that looking forward, that big picture sort of thing. But I'm sure you do still take on projects because you just released a new book.
Yeah.
But a project can be either a new book or something within your company or a new company altogether. But Vincent, can you just tell me what the process, whether it's just like a gut feeling or a written process, but when an idea comes through your email or through your head, how do you decide right now when it's worth either your time, energy, and resources, or else your team's?
Okay, very simply, do we have a secret sauce for it? Yes or no? That's really all I'm thinking about when I take on a project. Basically, everything is competitive. There aren't that many new ideas. And even if you have a new idea that no one's done before, you're still going to get traffic to it. There's something I say time and time again, like when people go, should we use this software which analyzes our followers, which analyzes the titles we use on emails? And I say, yes, but it doesn't really matter because you need to grow that email list, you need to grow your social followers, you need to get traffic to your website. Most of these tools and most of these blog posts are about very peripheral incremental changes. You know, they add 1%, 2% here. You have a slightly better call to action, then that adds 1% in traffic. You need to look at the large things. And I say you only really need to get three things right. Number one, you need to get a lot of traffic. Number two, to a landing page that converts well. And number three, of a product people want. So when I have a new project, and I have two right now that I'm working on. Yeah, so the question is, do we have a secret sauce that can't be replicated easily, like a massive competitive advantage? And then, yeah, that's really only the only thing I think about. And yeah, people have brought me ideas and people I work with have brought me ideas. And I'm just like, where's the secret sauce? So we have to have something that we're better at. And that secret sauce can be anything from we can write better copy than anyone. We have better sales links than anyone. We know how to get a ton of traffic. So any competitive advantage I don't really like hard work.
Does it have to be, like, when you say secret sauce, like, does it have to have sort of like a trademarked name to it? Does it have to be brandable? No.
It's a very loose term, but it just, yeah, like, if something's hard to do, I don't know if it's worth doing. Like, you need to have something which will make you win. You know, you can write code and build features way faster than your competitors. Like, it can be literally hundreds of things. But yeah, if you're trying to go into competition with someone, your profits will likely be competed away, unless you have something which stands out. You know, you innovate in distribution, in marketing or sales in some way that they can't compete with. Blue Ocean Strategy is a good book about this sort of area. So you need to, like, reinvent a product. Like, Circus had diminishing returns for decades, but then Cirque du Soleil, which combined circus with theater, it was just miles ahead. Everything started selling out straight away. They tweaked things ever so slightly, and it would take years for someone to copy it. So they were miles out ahead, first mover advantage. So having that is what I like, because I like it to be easy. You know, a Kickstarter, I wouldn't say it's easy, but on the first day we made £10,000 and like 15,000 Canadian, whatever, because we took things real sensible. We found the people who are interested in what we're doing, and we let them know the book's coming out, and then they bought it. You know, it's really as simple as that. And we did something extremely unusual. We didn't get any PR. Look at any Kickstarter that's been successful over $10,000, swamped with PR. That's how most Kickstarters get their PR. But what if you don't have a product that's PRable? You look at all the guides for how to do Kickstarter, they all hinge on PR, every single one. But some things just aren't that exciting. Some things cannot get press. So you need to know how to build a community, how to get traffic from various platforms. So that's what we did. And that's I give a new talk on how to launch a product, crowdfunding. Yeah, and we don't really talk about PR. A major problem most companies do is they're like, we'll get PR and that's how we'll get users. And if PR don't like your face, you're finished. So yeah, I like to keep things real simple.
So of the three things that you need, traffic is the first one. Where did you get traffic for Kickstarter?
Okay, so, well, we did, in terms of our own networks, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and our own email lists, that's four absolutely massive channels there. And we didn't really have specifically massive followings on any of those platforms. Like, we had a few tens of thousands on Twitter, but
yeah,
Twitter, so few people see tweets that it's not that big. We also built a viral waiting queue, which I think is essential if you're building a product. So that is everyone who signs up to your landing page, they get put in a queue, say in 500th place, and they say to move to the top of the queue, invite your friends by email, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and then you move further up the queue, and at the top of the queue, you have prizes. So in our case, it was free consultancy, we'll write a blog post on you, free webinars. In a typical company, it would be get the product first, get the product free, et cetera, et cetera. So you put those at the top of the viral waiting queue, and then people duke it out to get to the top. So we had 2,300 people in our waiting list on day one, and we only invited 1,000. So we had 2,300 people waiting for us to send that email. Hey, the book's out now. You know, that's really major. We also did a Funderclap, so funderclap.it. That's when you get people to agree to share a link to your website at a certain time. So we had an addressable audience of 335,000. And when that went out, we made $3,000 in an hour when that Funderclap hit, because it was so many people's Facebooks hit it at once. So those are the main things I did. I also did continual little bullets. So I got continual small email shout outs and social shout outs from co-working spaces, accelerators, influential people. No one big, no one anyone would have heard of, but we're just like a constant two or three a week. Oh, we put a shout out in this newsletter. And it all adds up. So yeah, so we crawled to, you know, where we are now, like $75,000. But it was consistent growth, still going. And so it's not a case of we built a fake profile on Tinder and we told boys you should start a company and this is the book you need to start a company. Like, that's what people want me to say. Like, oh, you're a growth hacker. What crazy hack did you do? And it's like, sorry, it's basically just traditional marketing, basically just a mix of direct marketing and spray and pray. And it works. Yeah. So like we couldn't write any crazy articles on how we did it, but you know, we raised the money, which was the point.
It would be kind of a crazy article because nobody wants to just say that that's what they did.
Yeah.
But It's exactly what the first one thing you said is, just put your ass in the chair and do the work.
Yeah.
And I love how most people in a position where they don't have those giant names to do it, or the PR, whatever it is, that would be their excuse to not do it.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, that's the reason to do it. Just do it.
Yeah. And bear in mind, we only did this 1 month's notice. So we just decided on a whim to do it. So we just got everything together and then went for it. And we're not finished the cycle. We still have more things to pull out. On the day we decided to do, like, Austin called me in Boston and said, let's do this. So the next day I took a flight to Denver. It was like a 4-hour flight. And when I finished that flight, I had 19 detailed acquisition channels. Here is where we're going to get traffic. We still haven't finished going through them, but you have to do that when you have a product idea. These are all the places we're going to get traffic. And then you try different channels and see what works.
I love it, man. I love it. All right, Vincent, this has been an absolute blast, man. I want to wrap up on one final question for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So you've been at this through a couple businesses now. You've had some really big successes, but I know from the inside, from personally, we never see success ourselves. Success is always going to come in 1 month when you hit that revenue goal, in 3 months when you stand on that stage, in 6 months when you launch another bestseller book. Whatever it happens to be, right before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future. And no matter what you accomplish, Vincent, you're always going to want more and never see yourself as successful. No matter how many of us stand out here watching you and be like, holy shit, man, dude's killing it. It's just the way it is. So I would love it right now, Vincent, if I know you want to go big places and do big things, but from everything you've done through your two companies now, the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses, up till today, could you tell me just how you feel about everything you've accomplished up until now?
I feel great. I'm close to, doing everything I want in life. I thought that on my first tour when I was in Austin. I was like, damn, I'm getting everything I want in life. And yeah, I very much subscribe to the philosophy of you can't delay gratification forever. So I probably could make more money if I just, was in my apartment at home and doing all this stuff. But I'm enjoying life and travel. So yeah, like I say to people, it's been a really good year if you're me. If you're me, it's been very good. Yeah, like I do appreciate all the good things that happen. I do think it's somewhat healthy and unhealthy to always want more than what you're achieving. But having that buffer is such a security. Like when people go, if you seem somewhat positive or happy or less stressed than other people, this isn't mine. The CD Baby founder said this. So, a girl said to him, you're so happy and positive. How do you get like that? And he said, well, it starts with earning $1 million. And I don't have anywhere near $1 million, like not a fraction of. But look, it starts with me knowing that I'll never have to work for someone else because I can coach people. At the drop of a hat, I could say I'm doing more coaching and get it. And it starts with having a financial buffer so you won't be broke. I used to be on welfare and benefits, so I know what it's like to have no money. And that was only 3 years ago that I was picking up a welfare check. So building that buffer is really essential. Like I see entrepreneurs who are still like trying to work a day job and stuff. And then I actually don't think you should have a day job. I think you should do whatever it takes to not have it, living off someone else, living with your parents, drinking no alcohol, living off ramen. People like James Altucher disagree with me on this, but I really think you have to give it all of your focus and block out everything else because it's just so hard. That's all there is to it. My growth hacks are great and you can do a lot with them, but you need space to test them. You need energy to get up to do them in the morning. So yeah, you need to say no to so many things.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. CD Baby, that's Derek Sivers.
Yeah.
Smart, smart, smart dude. Earn $1 million. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
That's good advice.
Yeah. He says he felt like giving the contrarian advice when he hears too much of the other side. Yeah. And likewise, he was another one who said, when everyone was saying, keep your day job while you build your entrepreneur. And he said, no, I feel like because of that, I want to say the opposite. And yeah, I definitely feel the same. Like being on welfare allowed me time as much as possible to do this. I still had to occasionally I had to get a part-time job when I was like 3 months behind on rent. But yeah, it's really important that you have the mind space to do it. It doesn't matter what you read or what you learn.
I love it, man. I love it. All right, Vincent, it's been an absolute blast. We got to talk about your business and your new book in passing, but could you now specifically tell the listener where to find both of those?
Yeah, so my new book is Secret Sauce, A Step-by-Step Guide to Growth Hacking. It's available on Indiegogo right now. So if you search Secret Sauce on Indiegogo, you'll find it. If you search bit.ly/Indiego, in I-N-D-I-E-G-O, all in capitals, the Indiego bit, you'll find it. Or we'll put a link in the podcast too. So it's a step-by-step guide to every growth channel, Instagram, SEO, content marketing, sales. So every single acquisition channel we could think of, all the tools we use, all the tools to get press, just born out of frustration that there's so much bad information out there and so little of it practical. So like I've been giving this talk for like the last year on growth hacking, was voted best workshop at South by Southwest V2V. So yeah, I created it because most companies can't afford to hire me, but people love the advice I have. So I just put it all in one place, a book and video course, so that anyone can sit there and click and learn how to do it.
I love it. I love it. And your company is magnific.com?
Yeah, magnific.com, or my name, vincentdignan.com.
Excellent. So magnific.com, the Indiegogo for Secret Sauce, the step-by-step guide to growth hacking.
That's right.
And a whole bunch of links that Vincent talked about for resources. There was Audience, there's the Blue Ocean Strategy book, discoverly.com, the Charlie app, which I used today actually to learn about Vincent. Derek Sivers was on this show a few months back. I'll link to that episode as well. As well as Glengarry Glen Ross. If you haven't watched the movie, definitely check it out wherever you can, because I think you have to. It's just part of it. And Vincent is Vincent Dignan on Twitter. So you can reach out to him there if you wish. So Vincent, once again, man, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. I really 100% appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome, inspiring to watch.
Cool. Thank you so much. You also.
Vincent, thank you so much for joining me and sharing. That was a fun conversation that I really, really enjoyed. I like your attitude, and your energy is quite infectious, I would say, which is always cool. So listening to this conversation with Vincent as I was part of it, but then going back and listening to it again, it was interesting. There was 9 things that I wanted to go back and listen to. So I did, and I got it down to 5, and then I got it down to 4, then I got it down to 3. Then I got it down to 2. Then I listened one more time back to this one part of the conversation. And when I listened back that last time, there was something that Vincent said that was so very, very clear and crucial. That one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I don't have any special skills. I'm not a coder. I don't think I'm a particularly great marketer, although I do it for a living, but all I have is a work ethic, like a very, very strong work ethic. And I will sacrifice anything to improve on the things that I'm good at.
And that's the hack. Vincent, Vincent, Vincent. I don't have any special skills. I'm not a coder. I'm not even a particularly good marketer, although I own a marketing agency. But I'll sacrifice anything, and I have a work ethic that will just outdo anyone and will allow him to become better at what he does, to sacrifice and improve on the things that he's good at. I love that this whole beginning of the conversation, the first 15 minutes or so, is mostly about the reasons why he can do things, not the reasons why he can't, not the reasons why things won't work, but the reasons why he's going to keep his ass in the chair until he makes the things that he wants to happen in his life work. This is such an essential skill of any successful entrepreneur. No matter what you want to do, you can't do it without this work ethic. You can't do it without this level of ambition and knowing that the only thing really standing in your way is yourself. Obviously, there's going to be a ton of obstacles. Obviously, things are going to come up all the time. Things are going to distract you. sidetrack you, hold you back, make you fall and stumble and all that stuff. Of course, that's how life works. But that's irrelevant if you want it bad enough. If you are willing to sacrifice anything to continually improve yourself and your business, that's what it takes. I love the simplicity of it, and I love how you, from the very beginning, Vincent, from the very, very beginning, which, I mean, that's your one thing, is ass in chair. You're going to outwork other people if that's what it takes. And that is what it takes. I appreciate the simplicity. I appreciate the honesty. And I appreciate just the attitude and the mindset of someone who has already gone cool places and done cool things. But it's, I don't think it's just me, but you out there listening, you can probably just sense it from listening to Vincent. He's someone who's going somewhere because of this attitude, almost because of nothing else, but because of this attitude and this mindset. Embrace this yourself in any way that you can and use it to go the places and do the things that you want to do. Vincent, once again, thank you so much. All right. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the site. Have you been there recently? Have you got onto the email list? You should. Yeah. You can, as soon as you go to Hack the Entrepreneur, you'll see it at the top. There it is. Drop that in and I will write you my best work every Sunday morning, afternoon, sometime. And yeah, I think you really dig it. I think it will possibly be that boot that you need to kick you, to get you going. You know, when things get hard, we're working by ourselves, especially sometimes we just need that little bit of a kick out the door, a little bit of motivation. I'll try my best to do that for you if I can. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so very much again for stopping by. I truly 100% appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.